come to Mount Sinai. Moses had led them out of Egypt across the Red Sea, and they have been gone now from Egypt for 3 months. And as the chapter starts, we see where Moses is on the mountain. He's with God, and he's been there for a while. And we see where the Israelites, the people, that they become distressed. And, of course, what they call for is for Aaron to make them a god. And he makes them a golden calf. And that's what we read here. Exodus chapter 32. Exodus chapter 32 and verse 1. Now, when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, "Come, make us gods that we shall that shall go before us. For as for this Moses, the man who brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me." So all the people broke off the golden earrings which were in their ears and brought them to Aaron. And he received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molten calf. Then they said, "This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt." So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it, and Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is a feast to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings, and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. And the Lord said to Moses, "Go, get down, for your people whom you brought out of the land of Egypt have corrupted themselves. They have turned aside quickly out of the way, which I commanded them. They have made themselves a molten calf, and worshipped it, and sacrificed to it, and said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" And the Lord said to Moses, "I have seen this people, and indeed it is a stiff-necked people. Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation." So we start with the sin itself, the sin of the golden calf. According to the restating of this history by Moses a few years later, in fact, over 40 years later, he said, "This is your sin." He said the golden calf, he told Aaron, his brother, "This is your sin, your sin." And no doubt it is a sin. This is the Israelites, because they had an ongoing spiritual condition of which God said they were a stiff-necked people. The word in some translations is rebellious. They rejected God, Acts chapter 7 says, as Stephen in his preaching tells Israelites, don't repeat the problems that your ancestors had, how that they were rebellious before God. And what he brings up is the incident at the golden calf. And then, of course, they execute Stephen, the gospel preacher. And then we see that even still later, the Israelites, they're warned of God at this time, but they, 2 years later, maybe, they are on the brink of entering the promised land, and they don't trust God. They do not trust God. So I called the sermon the golden calf, "Whom do you trust?" And if anything were to resonate in your minds today, if only one thing resonates in your mind, it's the question, whom do I trust? Whom do I trust? Will I trust God, or will I build a golden calf? And I believe we're going to do one or the other. We're either trusting God or we're building a golden calf. When you see the incident of the golden calf, it represents a people that have stooped to a level of depravity. They have fear, first off, saying, "Where is Moses? He delays his coming. Where is he?" And so when people are in a state of crisis, they do bizarre things, very bizarre things. And as we read through the story, we, of course, see that Aaron then gives a little bit different version of what had happened. In Exodus chapter 32, and Moses confronts him, and of course, Aaron says, this is what happened. Aaron said, we'll start in verse 11. Then Moses pled with the Lord his God and said, "Lord, why does your wrath burn hot against your people, whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and with a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians speak and say, 'He brought them out to harm them, to kill them in the mountains and to consume them from the face of the earth'? Turn from your fierce wrath and relent from this harm to your people. Remember Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your own self and said to them, 'I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven, and all this land that I have spoken of I give to your descendants, and they shall inherit it forever.' So the Lord relented from the harm which he said he would do to his people. And Moses turned and went down from the mountain, and the two tablets of the testimony were in his hand. The tablets were written on both sides, and on one side and on the other they were written. Now the tablets were the work of God, and the writing was the writing of God engraved on the tablets. Verse 17. And when Joshua heard the noise of the people as they shouted, he said to Moses, "There's a noise of war in the camp." But he said, "It is not the noise of the shout of victory, nor the noise of the cry of defeat, but I hear the sound of singing," or "the sound of singing I hear." Verse 19, so it was, as soon as he came near the camp, that he saw the golden calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. Then he took the calf which they had made, burned it in the fire, and ground it to powder. And he scattered it on the water and made the children of Israel to drink it. And Moses said to Aaron, "What did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them?" So Aaron said, "Do not let the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people, that they are set on evil. For they said to me, 'Make us gods that shall go before us.' As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And I said to them, "Whoever has any gold, let them break it off." So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. So at this point, you see that Aaron gives a different version of what had happened. That's not really what had happened. He didn't just cast gold into a fire and a calf comes out. But what I want to note is this, that when great fear comes upon a people, people become superstitious. The English philosopher Chesterton said that when people do not believe in God, it's not that they believe in nothing. Actually, they will believe in anything, in anything. And so people just become somewhat what we would call not only predictable, but also just erratic. They'll turn to anything. So again, let's remember what the environment is for these Israelites. They'd come out of Egypt. They come over here to this area of Midian or maybe the Sinai Peninsula. And they are distant from anywhere as far as civilization is concerned. And their leader has evaporated. He's disappeared. 40 days, he's gone. 40 days and 40 nights. And he doesn't appear. And they're saying, "Here we are alone. What are we going to do? We're desperate." And so they turn to idolatry. Not just to idolatry, but to a golden calf. And then what Aaron says is, "Wow, we just cast this gold into a fire and out came a calf." And so I remember when I was a kid, I heard this expression, "If you're going to tell a lie, tell a big one." Okay, if you're going to tell one, tell a big one. And so if you're going to really make it sound sensational and justifiable, really make it sound, you know, just spectacular. And so that's what Aaron does at this point. But what they do is this. They actually create a golden calf. They worship the golden calf. They sacrifice to the golden calf. And when people have something which they trust to drive their life, they will give all they've got in order that they might supply it. That's what sacrificing is about. All that they have. These people are willing to give up of their wealth in order that they might sustain an idol that they believe is going to anchor them in life. This is an idol that's going to give them promise. This is an idol that's going to lead them. An idol that's going to satisfy them, and now they're making sacrifices to them. So the question of which we started the lesson was this. Do I trust God or will I build a golden calf? Because when you take God and all the alternatives, you have God. You have God. And you're saying, what are the alternatives? None of the alternatives even measure close to what God is. Nothing's even close. In fact, it becomes idiotic. And so when you see the golden calf and you're thinking, wow, this is a real stretch. Why didn't they just say, we're going to follow Aaron instead of Moses? Or we'll somehow or another get together a council. The Israelites were told to get together a council of 70 people. We'll get a conference and we'll then vote. We'll have some kind of leadership. No, they totally go off the deep end. They are binging on idolatry. This is the very thing of which God, you know, begins the Ten Commandments. Have no other gods before me. Why? He says, because I am a jealous God. I will not play second fiddle to anything else because I created you. I am the one that brought you out of bondage. I am the one that put you in place to inherit the promised land, to inherit the eternal blessings of God. It's me. And why would I stand for someone else to be worshipped? And so they binge on idolatry. Not just idolatry in a minor fashion, idolatry in a great fashion. They have this golden calf. They are worshiping this calf. Notice before that they were in great fear. Now they have a celebration tone. They're thinking, I came up with something and it sort of pleases everybody, and we feel good about ourselves now. And again, that's what the alternatives to God do for people. So many times people will say, I need answers in life. And as a teacher of the gospel, there have been times of which people have said, our family has a great distress. These are just neighbors of mine. And we have a great distress. And of course, what I respond to them with is what the words of Jesus are. That is, if any man will follow me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and come after me. Okay, in other words, it's all out and all in. That's what it is. Full surrender. Going to follow God. God is going to be the one whom I trust, not just someone that's going to get me out of my immediate peril. One of the immediate perils was a man says, my wife's going to leave me. Okay? So I talk with him. I talk with his wife. They mend their marriage, but they don't want to serve the Lord. Oftentimes, people want just a fragment of what God wants to fix whatever the immediate problem is. They have problems with teenage children. They have problems because they've had a death in the family or some kind of financial crisis. And so you get someone back on their feet, you know, past their financial crisis, and you're saying, now, trust the same Lord who gave you the wisdom on how you're going to exist day by day. Trust the same Lord. And many won't do it. They just won't do it. They simply want to cure whatever the immediate peril is, even if they turn to superstition. I say superstition, they sacrifice to the golden calf. Superstition means that I'm trying and trusting something that I believe has more power than I do. So it could be something of the earth, could be gold or silver. It could be relationships. It could even be something above the earth, such when we think of superstitions, those who believe in astrology, they believe that the alignment of the stars and so forth, the horoscope, that those things which are above. And so in Scripture, you see those who worship that which was of the earth, the terrestrial, and those who worship that which was of the heavens, the celestial. They'll worship anything but God. That's the point. Anything but God. Trust anything but God. Why? Because these other things will still allow me to have some control or to have life on my terms. That's the point. And so at the end of this decade, say for instance, we're about to come to the year 2020. At the end of this decade, we can ask the question, who did I trust for the last decade? Did I trust God or did I build a golden calf? I can ask that question. And so my persuasion to you and my persuasion to myself is that I want to right now demonstrate that I trust God. And not looking for something else to be not only my creator but and my keeper, but my deliverer. That's what I have. These people had some problems with this. God told Moses in response, I am going to let them be the object of my wrath. I will destroy them, all of them, and I will raise up seed after you. A couple of things here, one of which is Moses didn't want that. He persuaded God. Could God have raised up seed after Moses? I believe he could. Jesus said that God could even raise up his people, those who would be fashioned after his son, out of stones, as John the Baptist said that in Matthew chapter 3. In other words, the Lord doesn't need those pesky Pharisees and scribes, those chief priests that thought that the whole world depended upon them. He says, no, God can raise up his children out of stones if he wants to, because God has a way. With God, nothing is impossible. God could have raised up seed after Moses and made all of his promises come true. I don't know how, but God's got that much power. But the second thing is, Moses actually persuades God on the basis of which he says, the Egyptians will see that you have failed. Don't make this something of which the Egyptians gloat about. Make it to where these people, through these people, you are going to reward with the promised land. You are going to bring the promised son. Make it to where this is going to happen according to what their expectation is, so that as history bears out, the Egyptians served the wrong gods, the Israelites served the right God. And God accommodated Moses in this request. So we fast forward this. The idea of judgment, that God was going to simply kill all those people but raise up a seed after Moses, God gave them a second chance. I say, yet they perished in the wilderness. So 2 years later, they are on the brink of entering the promised land. We see where they send in 12 spies, two of which come back faithful, Joshua and Caleb, 10 which come back unfaithful. They said, we're as grasshoppers in our own eyes. Those are giants of the land. We cannot do this. And they did not trust God. God says, you're going to be punished for 40 years in the wilderness, and not one of you is going to live except those two faithful men. So what we see is this. These people had not developed a trust for God in those 2 years. In fact, he says, you're all going to perish. There's going to be punishment. This generation, he says, will not see the promised land except for those two men. You will not see the promised land. Why? It's because they didn't trust God. They did not have a trust for God. What were they doing? In their minds, and you see this brought up as history goes on, in their minds, they're still worshiping the golden calf. They are bending on idolatry. That's what they're doing. And again, I will say that if we do not walk today in trust of the Lord, we have constructed a golden calf. We have constructed a golden calf. So I ask the question, whom do we trust? Whom do we trust? Well, first off, we need to trust God, who is our creator, who is our keeper. He's our deliverer. That's who we trust. Notice when we see the story in Exodus chapter 32, of these individuals that build the golden calf, and then Aaron says, this is the God who brought you out of Egypt. And you're like, wait a minute, that golden calf didn't earn any trust. First off, it's an inanimate object. It's something that was created by God, not something that is a creator of itself or of anything else. And certainly, it didn't bring them out of the land of Egypt. And so they became what somewhat imaginative. But again, that tells you how out of whack people's minds go when they are in fear. And when they've left God, they'll believe anything. In 1 John chapter 1, I like this because the sermon series is called When Life Meets God. And what John is doing is this. He's bringing God into one's life. He's bringing God into a daily walk, into trust of which we have. He says, this is the message which we have heard from him and declare to you, that God is light and in him is no darkness at all. And if we say that we have fellowship with him and walk in darkness, we lie and do not practice the truth. But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his son, cleanses us from all sin. So you see where God, who is light, in whom is no darkness, is our leader. God is our leader. He says, God, who is light, is our leader, but he's also our redeemer. Because through his son, Jesus Christ, we are cleansed from all sin. God becomes our deliverer. So he's both our creator, he's our deliverer. Before we overlook it, I want you to see in 1 John chapter 1, the first four verses. Because this is where life meets God. Because when he describes Jesus, he puts Jesus as a physical human being that walked upon this earth, who is earning our trust that we shall walk with God. 1 John chapter 1, verse 1. That which was from the beginning, which we have heard, which we have seen with our eyes, which we have looked upon, and our hands have handled concerning the word of life. This life was manifested, we have seen and bear witness and declare to you that eternal life which was with the Father and was manifested to us, that which we have seen and heard, we declare to you that you also may have fellowship with us. And truly our fellowship is with the Father and with his Son, Jesus Christ. And these things we write to you that your joy may be full. He says, we have seen God live in the flesh on the earth. We saw it. We heard it. He says, we handled this person. We touched this person. Now he's saying, make this person your keeper and your deliverer. Make this person your keeper and deliverer. So as we walk in the light, as he is in the light, we have fellowship with him. This is our life. This is our life, that it's a walk with God. This is the question of which we must ask ourselves in this decade. Are we trusting God, or are we building a golden calf? It's one or the other. It's one of the, there's no in between. There's no middle ground here. Either we're trusting God or we're building a golden calf. But I just want you to see that he's saying God has gotten up close, and he's gotten up personally next to us, and that Jesus walked on earth and these apostles saw him. When we talked about God on Mount Sinai, and Moses went up to see him, those Israelites were deathly afraid of God. They didn't get close to God. They did not get close to God physically. Of course, God told them to stay away, but in spirit, they did not get close to God. Here he's saying, we get close to Jesus. We get close to Jesus. We trust a Jesus who walked on this earth. He walked with us. He is divine. He's our keeper. He is our deliverer. He cleanses us from our sin. Whom do we trust? Well, we don't trust man. You see, the blame was first placed on Moses. Moses hasn't shown up. He delays his coming. And so oftentimes when humans disappoint us, we blame the human. I've talked to quite a few folks and wondering why they're not serving God, and they blame it on a man. They blame it on another human. They blame it on somebody in their family. They blame it on another Christian. They blame it on religious leaders. And I'm thinking, well, that's possible, and I won't defend anyone that hasn't walked according to God's will, and they're not leading according to God's will. I will not defend that, but I will defend God. I will defend God. Notice, though, that they say Moses delays his coming. Moses is out of the picture. What are we going to do? We're going to serve an idol. And you're like, wait a minute. The foundation upon which Moses stood is God. You didn't just walk away from Moses. You walked away from God. That's what's going on. So when we ask, whom do we trust? One of the ways in which we can construct a golden calf is that we trust men. And then what will men do? Men will, they will disappoint. Men will deceive. Men will, in some way, discourage. And, of course, men will die. Men are not the foundation upon which we're to build. We're to build ourselves upon God. So some would even trust their fathers, their ancestry, or their relatives, or even trust themselves. It's not in man that walks to direct his own steps. That's a repetitive statement throughout the entire Bible. And someone says, I'm just going to go with how I feel. You've just built a golden calf. It's yourself. That's what you've built. We're not to trust idols. I mentioned superstitions, either the earth beneath or the stars above. As 1 John chapter 5, verse 21 closes, it closes in a fashion of which is warranted by the story of the golden calf. Because as we read 1 John chapter 1, this first part of the letter, talking about how we're to trust Christ and he is to be our deliverer, it ends with this. And someone might say, well, wow, this is bizarre. 1 John chapter 5 and verse 21, he says, little children, keep yourselves from idols. So that's the contrast. The contrast is you're either trusting God, walking with God, he says, or you're trusting idols. You've constructed something else other than God that's going to be your keeper and your deliverer. He says you're trusting idols. And so that, to me, that's profound, just because of the contrast of which he starts the letter and with he ends the letter. We talk about God. Whom do we trust? God can be trusted. He can be trusted with our lives. He can be trusted with our eternity. I emphasize that we must walk in our generation with God. So sometimes it seems easy for people not to connect themselves with a walk with God, and they'll say, well, one of these days I'll be the Christian that I should be. So that's why I like to say, in the last decade, have you trusted God, or did you build a golden calf? In this decade, I meet people that have gone for 5 decades on earth, maybe 6. And you'll say, what have you built your life on? What is your trust all this time? And getting people to admit it is difficult. But if I can just get them to say to themselves, it wasn't God. I know that it's a golden calf. It is a golden calf. But I can do that for someone else, but I have to do it for myself also. I have to say, as I move forward in my life, am I walking with God? Am I walking with a trust with God through His Son, Jesus Christ? So I put a couple of passages, two of which I think you're probably very familiar. One is Joshua chapter 24. Ken Shontag took us to this passage just a week or so ago. And what Joshua is doing, and this is pivotal because Joshua is now bringing the next generation into the promised land. The previous generation died in the wilderness. God could have executed them on the spot, but He gave them a reprieve, and over the next 40 years, they did die anyway. He said, if you don't trust me, you don't deserve to live. That's what He's saying. Now you have the next generation. This is the next generation that is going to go to the promised land. And Joshua says, as they're on the brink of settling the promised land, they've already entered, but as they are settling the promised land, he says in verse 14, now therefore fear the Lord, serve Him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. So the contrast again is the Lord or gods, idols. Serve the Lord. He says, and if it seems evil to you, serve the Lord, choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river or the gods of the Amorites. He says, in whose land you dwell, but as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. In that case, he's talking to Israelites that were fully aware of what happened back at the golden calf. They're fully aware of that whole generation which perished in the wilderness. And he's saying, your turn. That's what he's saying, it's your turn. You decide, it's your turn. And so a lot of times people are thinking about adulthood, and believe me, you take a 12-year-old kid, and he can already see the gate that's going to open into adulthood, okay? And you're saying, what does that gate look like? Does it look like God is your keeper? That God is your deliverer in your adulthood, or that you want to have some other kind of adventure, sort of like the prodigal that Jesus talked about, took his inheritance and went off and lived in a corrupt fashion. What does it look like? What does that next decade look like? And all of us, I think, can look forward to that next decade. Joshua is saying, what does the next decade look like? He says, Set your parameters now. Make your choice today. I chose Acts chapter 2 and verse 40 as the passage, the last passage. And that is because Peter in his sermon, the first sermon recorded when the gospel was launched in the city of Jerusalem, and these Jews are listening to him, and he says this, be saved from this perverse generation. That's what he says. He says, you're now living in your time. Will you be saved or will you be lost? That's what he's saying. I want to rephrase it. Will you trust the Lord or will you continue to construct a golden calf? I want to say it that way. And I believe even in the book of Acts, we talked about Stephen a moment ago in Acts chapter 7 and how that he was stoned. Because he told those people in similar fashion, similar words of which God used in Exodus chapter 32. He said, ye stiff-necked and uncircumcised. If you think about it, those Israelites that were there celebrating the construction of this golden calf, and God looks upon them, they were stiff-necked. He calls them that. He later says, you will be circumcised before you enter the promised land. The next generation gets circumcised. Those people were uncircumcised. Not just uncircumcised in the flesh, they were uncircumcised in heart. They weren't walking with God. They were God's people by command. They were God's people because of circumstance. And I say, quote, God's people. But God says, in heart, they're not my people. They were commanded out of Egypt. They're out here. Their circumstance puts them here. And that's pretty much what puts us where we're at. We live where we find a job. We live close to our family, those kinds of things. But by faith, we trust God. We do not build the golden calf. I'm through preaching now. If you'd like